Some extracts from Afterlife, Uncovering the Secrets of Life After Death, a very good and easily read book on this, for all important theme, from 2011. The astral body is best described as our mind, or consciousness. After the energy from the etheric body is cut off after death, the astral body returns to what are generally known as the astral planes. Here, there are many different levels or planes of existence. Our soul is guided to its appropriate level, according to our development. Our astral body knows the astral world well, as it is accustomed to traveling there all through our life, usually when we are asleep. The astral body is attached to our physical body by a very fine silver cord. This cord allows us to return to our body after astral traveling at night. Once the cord is cut, in what we refer to as death, our physical body perishes and our astral and physical bodies separate permanently. After the physical body perishes, the life force is transferred to the etheric body for a short period of time. This helps us to adjust to the new conditions. After that, the life force passes on to our astral body for the next stage of its journey back to the spiritual realm. This process is a bit like catching different forms of transport to get to our ultimate destination. The earth plane is far denser than the astral plane and the higher spiritual realms beyond that. These planes also vibrate at much faster rates, which is why they are invisible to us. Over a period of what we understand as time, we acclimatize to our new state of being. Our spirit is a form of energy that powers our body during earthly life. When it departs, the body dies. You only have to see a dead body to realize the life force has departed. The spirit, however, being pure energy, lives on. Believe it or not, the soul can even be weighed. In one bizarre recorded experiment, a man was weighed by his doctor just before and immediately after death. The difference was found to be approximately 3/4 of an ounce, 21 grams. Our higher self, ego, is pure spirit, it's that part of us which is immortal. The higher self resides in the world of spirit and controls the other three bodies, the physical, etheric and astral. This is different to the small ego, which is essentially our personality, and which drops away once we pass on. So, when we talk about being immortal, or of being pure spirit, we're actually talking about our divine or higher self. Once we learn how to communicate with our higher self through meditation, we gain access to an inner storehouse of wisdom and guidance. Our spirit guides utilize this energy source to inspire and advise us. We need never feel alone again. So, where do we go when we return to spirit? There are several directions the soul, now an astral body, can he go after death. Most souls are guided gently by loved ones who have already passed over and are waiting to escort them on their journey back to the spirit realms. But others can refuse to move on from the earth plane. They are held here by such things as physical cravings, for example drugs or sex. They can also remain because of a fear of the unknown. This fear of moving on is often related to the way the person has conducted themselves in life, perhaps believing they will be cast into some flaming hell to pay for their sins. Some can't accept they have died, or are very attached to a place or person, so they wander around lost and aimless, sometimes for centuries of earth time. This is what happens with ghosts and haunted places. There are also those who find themselves in a dark and eerie world. In the lower astral plane of existence, closest to the earth, souls are often at that level because of their own beliefs that there is nothing after death or as a result of their less than ideal activities in the life just ended. This plane of existence has been given many names. Many refer to it as purgatory. It is a part of the Buddho in Buddhism, the umbral region to spiritists, and the Jehanam in Judaism. The great psychic Edgar Cayce described it as the plane of darkness, where the soul is cut off from love and hope while it goes through a period of deep reflection. Whatever label we use, it is essentially a kind of halfway house between the earth plane and the spirit world. The soul experiences a sense of lovelessness and hopelessness because at that stage they feel beyond love and hope. The soul that finds itself in the lower astral plane goes through a time of intense reflection and cleansing before being admitted into the higher realms of the spirit world. There are several different levels on the lower astral plane. This is most likely where the concept of hell emerged. The good news is that there is actually no such thing as hell. Well, physical scene, yes, it is an inner state, but like-minded are dredged, pulled together by magnetic attraction, and such create a collective thought formed, but real enough place, as long as this thought form are maintained. Example link. The book A Wanderer in the Spirit Land of Franz Hesse. Rorem. The only demons you come across are those created by your own mental state, though they can appear very real. Helpers and guides from the higher realms visit the lower astral constantly to assist in healing individual souls. No one has to remain in darkness forever, as we are part of a loving universe. To put it in another way, no one is beyond love and hope. American channel Caroline Evers has a fascinating account of how she contacted the spirit of Julius Caesar in the lower astral. He had been stuck there since his death in 44 BC. Caesar talked of his guilt when he looked back on a lifetime of killing, maiming, enslaving, looting and creating misery for hundreds of thousands of people. He told Evers there is no such thing as death. After his assassination, he lived for many years surrounded by what he described as a gray world, where he was in a constant state of agony and mental numbness. As much as he wanted to, he was prevented from progressing to the next level, even though he knew of its existence. This stasis only served to intensify his anguish. He described the next step, which was denied to him, as a state of happiness and beauty. Whenever a portal of light opened for someone else to progress to this next level, he rushed to it, but each time was refused entry. The frustration he experienced at this loss of his power demonstrated graphically to him what he had done to others during his life, by selling countless people into hopelessness and slavery. His triumph as one of history's greatest generals meant nothing in this drab gray domain, as he was forced to relive again and again his cruel and heartless actions. He felt not only powerless, but also suffered the ignominy of a life that had brought so much pain and sorrow to so many. Caesar finally came to realize that nobody was punishing him for his actions. It was his own mind that was his tormentor. Caesar talked of many of his generals, legionnaires and followers, who chose to stay loyal to him and therefore suffered the same consequences for their greed and cruelty, constantly reliving their past deeds in the same gray mist. However, Caesar said all was not hopeless, as advanced souls came down from the higher levels to help with their education and healing. Evers revealed that the spirit of Caesar's daughter, Julia, was eventually able to help her father move on from his brutal past life deeds and gain entry to the next level. The concept of old souls is worth exploring. There is a tendency to think that old souls are all wise. My guide M. confirmed that describing someone as an old soul is not necessarily a compliment. We only return to the earth plane to learn and evolve, so the older the soul, the more they had to return as the lessons are not being learned. The vastness of the spirit world, just as there are many countries on earth, there are many planes of existence in the spirit world. The majority of us go to what Frederick Myers calls the plane of illusion. He locates this on the third plane and believes it is the light at the end of the tunnel many people describe that links earth with the afterlife. Myers was a professor of classics at Cambridge University in England more than a century ago. Fascinated with the afterlife, he founded the first Society for Psychical Research in 1882. Myers grappled with the question of contact from beyond the grave, and when he died in 1901, his work continued with communications from the spirit world. To avoid skepticism, he sent his messages through a variety of people in England, America, and India. The messages on their own did not make sense, but when joined together in jigsaw fashion, they formed a cohesive picture. These communications continued for some 30 years as Myers proved his messages were not created in the mind of one medium. Quite often the person receiving the message had no idea what it meant. From 1901 to 1932, more than 3,000 scripts were communicated. Like all those in spirit, Myers had great difficulty in sending messages from the other side. I appear to be standing behind a sheet of frosted glass which blurs sight and deadens sound. Dictating to a reluctant and somewhat obtuse secretary, he explained. Despite these difficulties, Myers sent through an enormous amount of details of life in the spirit world, all received by automatic writing. According to Myers, the plane of illusion is very similar to life on Earth. He described beautiful, peaceful surroundings where people live in communities in Earth-type houses. They eat, drink, play sports and even go to work. Life seems to continue from where it left off on Earth, but without the stress. Every pleasure the heart desires or the mind creates is available here, and manifested by the individual's thoughts, either consciously or unconsciously. So, if someone wants a lovely house to live in, full of beautiful furniture, they can create it simply by visualizing what they desire. Myers explained this lifestyle is readily adopted by those spirits who previously believed this type of existence is what heaven is all about. Such a place explains the large variety of descriptions we get via mediums about life in the great beyond. This sounds ideal, a real paradise, but after a while it begins to pull and boredom sets in, as everything comes too easily, without challenge. Myers says that when the soul is ready, it is then assisted to either find ways of accessing higher planes or return to Earth for another life. During our time on the plane of illusion, we still have access to our families and friends on Earth and, at the same time, we're in constant contact with our spiritual guides, as our learning and spiritual growth continues. So it would seem there are still certain responsibilities, even in paradise. The next level, the fourth plane, Myers calls the world of idealized form, where all desire to have any earthly contact disappears as the soul explores avenues beyond the confines of the earth plane. Reincarnation is now unnecessary in this beautiful world free of rigid intellectual structures and dogmas. The mind, given new freedom, starts to learn how to create an infinite variety of forms, to access energies and colors way beyond our imagination. Only evolved souls are able to access this and further higher planes. Essentially, Myers says, we have to earn our place to be admitted. The fifth level he calls the plane of flame. Here spirits take on a body of a flame symbolic, so they can explore the universe for cosmic understanding without being harmed by temperatures or turbulence. The exploring soul is able to return after each journey with a fuller understanding of these cosmic creatures. On this plane we are no longer in a form as we understand it. Instead, we become what is best described as an outline. Each soul is now part of a group soul, while still retaining aspects of their individuality as they advance. The sixth level is the plane of light, where the inhabitants are evolved souls. By this stage these souls have lived through all aspects of the created universe and they have completed their growth. They have left behind all need for matter and form and exist purely as white light. Here, pure reason reigns supreme. Emotion and passion, as we understand it, are absent. These souls are now white light and, according to Myers, the pure thought of their creator. The seventh plane of the spirit realm is the domain of God or the creator. Myers, who was not a religious man, describes this final plane of being as dwelling not only out of time, but outside of any universe. He describes it as the passage from form into formlessness. It is an existence that has no need to express itself in a shape, however tenuous, however fine. The soul who enters into the seventh state passes into the beyond and becomes one with God. My guide and confirmed that the vast majority of souls from Earth are living in the third plane. However, there are several different sub-spheres to this plane, where the soul can learn and progress before finally reaching the fourth level, the world of idealized form. This only happens after many incarnations. A chapter of the book is about his friend Rachel, who was in the process of an early leaving this world. As the author is clairvoyant, he had watched her and communicated with after just after she left this level, and so been able to give comforting help to some of her close friends about her new energy, when she passed, and her vital appearance. This was very comforting to them after seeing her suffer so much. I was then reminded by a mutual friend that Rachel had always loved dancing and used to conduct dance workshops, so it was apparent that I saw her dancing at her own funeral. There was no doubt a new door had opened for her. Rachel and I had known each other for many years. She had been the catalyst for my spiritual awareness to commence when we were both very young. We were appearing in a stage production of Daughter of Silence in the early 1960s. Rachel was the star of the show and I was playing a small role. I was very smitten by this beautiful girl, so when she asked me if I would like to go to a spiritualist church with her, I eagerly accepted. At the time I would probably have accompanied her to a biker gang rally. I was so infatuated. The spiritualist meeting was the first I had ever attended and it had a big impact on me. I realized for the first time in my life that contact with the spirit world was possible. My mind and intuition had been opened. The medium stood on a small platform in front of the congregation. One by one, along each row of the audience, the medium passed appropriate messages to everyone present. From their reactions I knew the messages were genuine. Rachel was given reassurance from a friend who had died tragically in a motorbike accident, which brought tears to her eyes. I remember being given a very encouraging message about my future and being told that I was one in a million, which was very surprising. Rachel thought it was just letting me know I was only one of many. Maybe it was my ego, but I chose to take the other interpretation at the time, and that message has provided inspiration for me ever since. Through my association with the spiritualist church, and with my own numerous experiences over time, I've come to realize just how alive the dead are. The details of their journey are fascinating and offer us lots of clues to what life is like on the other side. It seems many souls want to stay with their loved ones until after their funeral, and before beginning their journey back into the world of spirit. There is often a lot of concern felt by the deceased for those left behind, particularly if their loved ones are deeply grieving for them. And sometimes souls are still in a state of confusion at the time of their funeral, not fully realizing they have died. The evolution of the soul itself plays an important part in what happens next. Advanced souls, once freed from their physical body, intuitively remember where they are heading. They waste no time in hanging around once they have completed their earthly life's work. However, some people are so sick and weak, they need help from those in spirit to make their transition, as this too requires energy. Others can become very confused after long illnesses or extended medication. Like most of us going on a major trek, we want to rest up, so we can get the most out of it. Rachel knew intuitively she was close to death and chose to spend her final days resting peacefully. Spirit helpers are always there waiting to assist us in our crossing. Family members and other loved ones who have gone on before us know when we are about to cross over and are waiting to welcome us home again. Help is always on hand. It is up to us to accept it. Sometimes family and close friends report brief contact in some way with the person who has just died. They may experience a strong feeling, a familiar perfume or fragrance, or hear unusual sounds, while others actually see the departed, or receive symbolic signs. This apparently depends both on the soul itself and those who are open to contact. There are many ways those we love communicate with us. For example, we may hear their favorite music in unexpected places. When my partner Judy passed over, I kept hearing the song I associated with her being played on radio for months afterward. Several times I had to pull over and stop the car as I fought back tears. I still have an emotional reaction when I hear Joe Cocker's "You Are So Beautiful." In the book he also tells of his seemingly last incarnation where he fell in the Battle of the Somme, which also the English clairvoyant Stephen Trough has taken down a very interesting book about. So what of Brian, the young soldier, my former self? His unit was advancing on the enemy trenches when he was ripped apart by a stream of bullets from a German machine gunner. He was hit in the chest and also his right side, around his waist area. While collapsing to the ground he was also injured in the head around his left eye. Death did not come immediately. He lay in great pain on the battlefield, while his mates rushed on to tackle the Germans. Brian called for help, but none came. A great feeling of hopelessness and abandonment engulfed him as his life ebbed away. He felt that his mates had deserted him, and he was alone and frightened. With no understanding of what was happening to him, Brian was a desolate and miserable figure. He lay in agony for an hour before finally dying. Then something strange occurred. At first not realizing he was dead, Bran got up and wandered the battlefield. By now he was in a confused state, looking desperately for his unit, which he couldn't find. Even though he was no longer in pain, he felt even more abandoned than before. Then, suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, his grandmother appeared alongside him. Now, more confused than ever, Bran was immediately concerned for her safety. Battlefields are no place for little old ladies. "Gran, what are you doing here?" he stammered. "You're not supposed to be here. Get down before the Germans see you." His grandmother just smiled, shook her head, then motioned for him to follow her. After a few moments he did so, mainly because he had no other idea what else to do. It was then Bran remembered his grandmother had passed away a few years before the war began. He was still at school at the time. Suddenly he realized he must be dead, too. His grandmother nodded as if she could read his thoughts, smiling because she knew he finally understood. She held out her hand, and feeling dazed he took it in his. As they wandered away from the battlefield, the sounds of fighting faded away and the light began to dim as if night was falling. They went through a gate shaped like a three-pointed star, and entered a tunnel where they started moving faster and faster. Bran remembered a train ride he had as a boy that went through a long tunnel and this felt the same, but when he looked around they were not in a carriage, their bodies just seemed to float in space. There was a whooshing sound as they started to go even faster, and a galaxy of lights flashed by them. Bran held on tightly to Gran's hand, as it was a strange and unnerving experience for him. Then, without warning, they burst into bright sunlight. When his eyes adjusted, Bran thought he was back in Devon, England. They arrived at what seemed like a railway station, got into a trap pulled by a pony, and drove through the countryside. When they paused for a rest under the shade of a tree, Bran looked across the countryside of rolling green hills to the sea in the distance and, feeling contented and at peace, dozed off. They resumed their journey in the cart and eventually arrived at what felt to Bran like his village in Devon, with familiar houses and several faces he recognized. They were all smiling at him. He felt like he was home again. Inside his grandmother's house there was a big fruit cake on the kitchen table and a large pot of tea. Bran was glad he'd had a chance to rest under that tree and get himself together, as there were several people waiting to greet him and his welcome home provided quite a few surprises. He somehow recognized his sister, who welcomed him with open arms. It took Bran a little while to remember that he did not have a sister back on Earth. As he stared at her, she reminded him of a past life they had shared, and said it would all become clear soon. Observing from the sidelines, "I also recognized my son Matt from this current lifetime. Even though his appearance was different, I knew from the sense of his energy it was Matt." Then, a real surprise. Two army mates came over to Bran with big grins on their faces. There was Tosh, the big cockney, and Larry, a much smaller bloke, who had both died before Bran, and they told him they had been waiting for him to come over. The final surprise was being welcomed by Captain Osborne, Bran's commanding officer, who, unlike many other officers, had always treated the men very decently. Bran jumped up to salute, but Osborne laughed and told him all that was behind them now. It was a great reunion, even if they did only have tea to drink. After a while Bran started to feel overwhelmed by the very happy, noisy tea party, so everybody said goodbye and left him to rest. It was only then that he started to worry about his family back on Earth, so he asked his grandmother about his wife Jenny and his little son Simon. She told him not to worry, explaining that if he wished, he would be able to go back and visit them later, when his strength returned. As Bran was feeling exhausted now, Bran showed him to a room where he could recover. "The next chapter in my previous life came during another hypnotherapy session several months later. As I returned to my present consciousness, I was still feeling a little stunned that I could split myself between two realities in my life in the 21st century and my life as a World War I soldier. Yet the more I thought about it, the more I could feel the different emotions, the different bodies, the very different life situations. It was all too real to be a dream. But there's always that part of you that doubts." After this regression, I thought long and hard about this wartime experience I witnessed. I knew that we don't relive past experiences unless they are relevant to our present situation. When past issues resurface, we experience again the emotional pain, the physical problems and all the other issues related to what we went through. As I sifted through these experiences, several aspects of my current life also started to make sense. I had been born with a problem in my right side, so much so that I'd had a hernia operation at 2 years of age. It was my right side that had been badly hurt during battle. In my present life, I also had a lazy muscle in my eye at birth and had to wear glasses at an early age. You guessed it, the problem was in the left eye, which had been injured as Brian fell to the ground wounded a lifetime ago. Fortunately, I was given a spiritual operation on my left eye through John of God, the Brazilian medium who works with a team of doctors in spirit to heal people. Now I no longer need to wear glasses except for reading. My eyes have also straightened. An extreme case of eczema had erupted over 80% of my body after seeing John of God 2 years previously in New Zealand. I had asked him to release the past. Interestingly, the worst of the eczema was in my right side where my guide showed me Brian had been mortally wounded. During that operation in Brazil, I experienced some very real sensations as the doctors in spirit worked to heal me. This included a sharp pain, like a red-hot needle being jabbed into my right side. I was also told to meditate deeply and open my heart to allow the healing to take place. The eczema, which had been plaguing me for the previous 2 years, finally started to clear. I began to completely release and heal the past. My guide had told me I was fortunate to see Brian being escorted through the tunnel, as my spiritual understanding in that life as Brian was in its infancy. Perhaps this was because Brian had killed other men and was then slain in a horrible war while still so young. Either that or previous soul experiences were taken into account. The pieces of the puzzle kept coming together. I had a lifelong fascination with World War I, and in particular the Western Front, but I was born in 1942, so it would probably have been more appropriate for me to have had an interest in World War II. I knew that Brian had lived in Devon and was part of the Devonshire Regiment, but I had always thought the big battles of the Somme were in 1917. Research proved the major battles were actually fought in 1916 when the big British and French advance was made. When I tried to find out about his army regiment, my initial research came up blank and I started to have some doubts about what I'd seen. Then one winter's afternoon, M's voice came into my thoughts telling me to switch on the TV and watch the History Channel. I found myself watching a program called The Battle of the Somme. The documentary gave me a very strange, unsettled feeling as I experienced a sense of déjà vu. I was stunned to hear a reference to the 2nd Devonshire Regiment. This was my regiment. It had played a key part in that July battle and suffered great casualties around Mammeets. So it had happened. My doubts were put to rest. A stone plaque erected at the entrance to the Devonshire Regiment's cemetery at Mammeets reads the 8th and 9th Devon suffered very heavy casualties as they left their forward trench to attack. Later that day, the survivors buried their fallen comrades in that same trench and erected a wooden memorial with the words which are carved in the cross above: "The Devonshires held this trench. The Devonshires hold it still." Past life researchers always take note of a person's fascination with a particular time or event in history, as it is a good indication you may have experienced a lifetime there. I have long been fascinated with ancient Egypt and Rome, and other past life regressions have revealed that I had lives in those periods of history as well. One regression revealed I was a Roman soldier sent to Egypt as part of the invading force. I was the son of a senator and was murdered by a jealous woman in Cairo. Apparently, I was ordered back to Rome and had no intention of taking her with me, which triggered her rage. Shortly before this regression, I had visited Cairo and experienced a real fear for my life. I was very puzzled, as there was no good reason for this at the time. But, as often happens, past life regressions tap into our spirit and reveal a very good reason for our fears and fascinations. Experiences in the tunnel. The tunnel experience has been verified by many people under hypnosis who have been regressed to their own previous time of passing. Most report a kind of pulling sensation as their soul leaves their body. This is followed by a great sense of freedom and relief from pain and suffering. My late partner Judy described the sensation of having hands extended from spirit that gently helped her slip from her body. At this point, some people head straight for the tunnel, while others choose to stay around to comfort loved ones in their grief.